Okay, let's get ready for Fright Night. Final hour to go here of Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM, plus Open Lines in general, when we come right back. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Open Lines. And let's go to the phone. Santa Maria, California. Gary's with us. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Oh, thank you, George. I'm going to step out on a plank here, and I'm going to invite you to step out with me. The scariest thing that you ever talk about, and I don't think you have any doubt about it, is the hardening of the grid and how vulnerable we are. Then I hearken back to Ed James, who was always talking about, Ed Dames, always talking about the kill shot.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, he thinks it's coming really soon now. He's going to be
on. Time before last, I talked to him on the air, and I really tried to pin him down on the effect of directed intention using astrology, and he kind of obfuscated a little bit. I wouldn't expect anything less. I think the CIA has intention and astrology way down pat, and I believe that they have known for an awful long time, because I helped them develop it back at TRW when the CIA, TRW used to build the CIA spy satellites, and they had two clients, American Express and the CIA at TRW.
Huh.
I was on the CIA side of the firewall, but all the techs, we kind of looked over each other's shoulders all the time.
Sure.
If you want to call. So I've been around the AI programming of this, except I was the only one bringing millions of astrology charts into it. Now, if intention is right, and I'm right about this Coast audience having an effect on sun flares with strong intention, if Russell Targ is right, that there are four groups of aliens, one of them wants us dead because our psychic ability can reach so far, with the right number of people focusing on a particularly sensitive sun flare can intentionally pop that thing off, maybe not just on this planet, but maybe on another alien world. And our government has said, look at you little boys, you keep your fingers out of our little oil pie here, or we're going to pop a sun flare and fry your planet, or fry our own planet, because we know exactly how to run the gravitons that do it from the craft that we recovered. Now, all of this seems to fit together. You can help me prove it if you got the guts to do it. And I'm not talking about tugging on a sun flare. I want to go the other direction. I want to take a really active flare like 2497 that just passed, popped off 30 times in a row after Jeff, myself, Annie, and then 2 days later, Cornelius. That thing went off 30 times when it had only went off once before we all called in.
So you folks are controlling these solar flares?
I think using astrology and intention, Lynn McTaggart and her little experiments with seeds and her failure at producing rain when she tried it on your show, they're not taking into account the gravitons of astrology, which were proved out on February 11th when they finally released the data that they gathered on September 15th. And I am categorically, from the data that I'm looking at here, every time you have an A-list of astrologers on, plus emotional intention from Alex Jones, Quayle, I've got it all categorized. It's off the page of coincidence tied into sun flares and emotion when you tie in the astrology.
Now here's the question, Gary. If it works this way, how is it working? What's going on?
Emotionally driving gravity, gravitons, gravity waves they were able to measure was the size of the tsunami. We threw $1 billion at it to get, we were able to detect the largest gravity wave in history, basically, but it proved that they exist. So the physicists now can't say that there's astrology is a bunch of crap. You can't take an object the size of Jupiter, which is 1,000 times the size of the Earth, and send it on a track through the Higgs boson field and not have it leave a gravity wake, just because it's such a small force that we can't measure.
So are you,
that thoughts can't be imprinted on.
Are you calling for an experiment or what?
Yes, an experiment to soothe an active sun flare. I don't want to go the other direction. I don't want to. If this government has the ability of actually triggering an extinction, well, it would be an extinction level event. You know about the grid. I mean, give us a year, we'll all be dead, or at least 9 out of 10 of us will.
If it goes.
And they would say, oh, act of God, we couldn't have prevented it. What if they cause it? What if that's what Ed Dames knows that he's not telling anybody, is that they have...
Well, you and I will ask him. He's going to be on within a month or so. We'll chat with him about that. But there's an active sun flare right now, sunspot, and it's pretty active. So why don't we do something about it?
Just think, well, get the astrology right. Make sure, and you got 100 astrologers. I spoke to Mitchell Lewis today, the financial astrologer, but you've got others. They will know where there's a compatible aspect between Venus and Mercury and the sun. You've got to get the astrology right, and then just ask your audience just to think calm.
Well, the next time there's an astrologer on, I want you to check in with us and ask them these specific questions that you're talking about and see if he even knows. And then we'll go on from there. We'll do the experiment. I'll do it. Let us go next to, where are we going? Whose turn? North Carolina. Doug's been on for a while. Let's get you, Doug. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good. Thanks.
Cool. I actually was calling because you had talked about how you wanted to have a fright night. And I had a couple of really frightening experiences happen to me that may be parallel, maybe synchronistical.
Uh-huh. Well, hit us with your best ones. Go ahead.
Sure. Okay, so the first one that actually happened to me, I was about 19, so now I'm 30 now, so it's been a while back. UFO experience. A buddy of mine and I were hanging out. I had seen a bright ball of light in the sky on the way home from a friend's house one night. So next day, my buddy's hanging out at the house. I'm telling him about it. He's like, oh, okay, whatever. So as I'm telling him about it, and get a call. I live at my parents' house at the time. I was 19. And I get a call, answer the phone. It's the Army.
The Army?
Yeah. So as I'm telling my friend about this UFO experience that I had, the Army calls. And so at this point, him and I are freaking out, you know? And so it was apparently it was an Army recruiter. You know, I guess I was of the age at the time.
I've never, by the way, I got to tell you, I've never had an Army recruiter, military recruiter ever call my house.
Yeah, it was a little odd. And it gets a little creepier and scarier as the story goes. So, it freaked me out for one because I was telling him the story of the UFO that I saw the night before.
Okay.
And then the Army calls. So I answer the phone. Hey, this is the Army recruiter, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to come to your house. Okay.
Come to your house? Wow.
Yes.
This is weird.
Click bye. Me and him were at my parents' house, scared. We're like, okay, let's leave. at this point, it's already dark. And so we're in his car. We're driving over to my friend's house because we're freaked out. I actually point out in the sky where I actually saw the light the night previous.
Mm-hmm.
There it is again. And I say, hey, so-and-so.
And it's not a star. It's not a planet. It's something moving around.
Say,
okay.
That's exactly what I saw last night. He says, oh, that is like that's like the top of a tower, like a cell phone tower,
yeah,
a plane tower or something. There's a regional airport in the area.
Yeah, but it should be red, right? Blinking red.
Right, right. So it was a bright, like yellowish, almost I would say like the color of a street light.
Okay. Amber type look.
Yeah. So I say, hey, that's exactly what I saw. And he says, blah, 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 you know, as I aforementioned, boom, split second, right above us. So we're driving down the road with this giant ball of light.
Escaping, hoping the Army guy doesn't show up, right?
Well, at this point, we're not even thinking about that. I mean, I'm not even thinking about the phone call. I'm just thinking about this, like, our adrenaline shoots through the roof. There's a giant ball of light following us down the road. We're looking at each other, like time slows down when your adrenaline shoots through the roof.
Not a helicopter, nothing like that.
Nothing like that, okay? So, follows us down the road at least a mile. We're looking at each other, looking back through the back window. We can see it behind us. Low enough to where we can see it, but high enough to where it's above the trees, too. So, once we get to a stop sign, this is about, I'd say about a half a mile. Once we pull up to a stop sign, another car pulls in. And as soon as this other car pulls in to the road, this thing shoots straight up in the air and disappears. Yeah. So.
Well.
That was a little scary.
Doesn't sound like it's of this planet.
Yeah, I can't say.
But I got to ask you, did the Army guy ever show up?
Yes. Actually, yes.
And he didn't ask any weird questions about the sighting, or did he?
Well, let me tell you this. So when the guy does show up, it's the next day. I'm at the house, and I have an older brother and a little brother. So we were at home by ourselves.
Yeah.
The guy pulls up. We live in a cul-de-sac. So a car pulls up. He parks in the cul-de-sac, comes up to the front door, knocks on the door, full Army attire. And we have a basement that has a window, you know, that you can see to the front of the house. So me and my older brother and my little brother are both in the basement looking out the window, just freaked out, because at this point I had already told my brothers what happened. And so Stu's knocking on the door. He goes back to his car, sits in his car for a little while, gets back out, and comes back and knocks on the door again, goes back to his car.
Persistent.
And then he comes back to the door and knocks on it again, like he knows we're there or something. So we end up answering the door. I'm like, okay, get a grip. I'm just going to go talk to this guy. I'm 19, you know, it's an Army guy said that they were coming to the recruiting age, you know, so I'm going to talk to the guy. I actually end up inviting him into my house. We talked for a while.
He was in uniform, I take it, right?
Yes. And, I spoke to him outside for a little while. I didn't want to invite him in, right off the bat. So I speak to him outside for a little while, and we get to talking, and he's, you know, telling me, you know, he's a recruiter, and he hands me a card, and he says, can you pronounce this name? And his name was Constantine. His last name was Constantine.
That's like that sounds like the devil.
Yeah, I don't know. It was odd. And, you know, the reason I actually recognized the name is because of the movie that had came out, Constantine, with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I recognized the name, and I was able, I guess, to pronounce it. I'm not a dumb person. I mean, I can read, obviously. But, so his last name is Constantine. He's like, okay, cool. Do you mind if I come in? I was like, okay, sure. You know? So he comes in. We're sitting in my parents' living room, and he's got a computer, and he asked me, you know, some questions and just basic things, I guess, for recruiting.
I got to tell you, this is highly unusual.
Yeah. And it's even more highly unusual. I have some other experiences that have happened.
Well, let's just finish this guy up.
Sure. So I take a test on a computer. It's got, like, math questions, English questions, blah, blah, blah. Just kind of breeze my way through it, BS my way through it, like taking a test, kind of trying to get this guy out of my house. You know, my parents aren't there. I'm freaked out.
Well, you brought him in.
Right. I'm 19. He's an authoritative figure. I mean, he wasn't.
He could have been tricking you, though.
Well, I mean,
you never know.
Too.
I mean, did he leave? What happened?
Yeah, I mean, after I did the thing, he left, and I haven't seen or heard from any.
I've got to look. I was with the Navy, Doug, for 9 years. I have never heard of a story where a recruiter would come to you. They might do that, but I never heard of it. You always go to them. This is weird. They wanted something else with you. I don't know. I don't know if it was tied into what you saw or what. But if you never asked those questions, I wouldn't worry about that. Let's go to Eugene, Oregon. Victoria's with us west of the Rockies. Hey, Victoria, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Thank you, George. It's nice to speak to you again. It's been a while.
It's been. Sure. What's new?
Well, a lot. Not all good, not all bad.
Tell us the bad.
The bad? Oh. Yeah, I know. That's a spooky, scary night, right?
That's fright night. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, George, one night, I'll tell you what I told your screener. One night, I was, no, it wasn't nighttime. It was actually late afternoon, and I was walking my dog around the college where I used, well, actually, let's see. It was part of the college, I think. I'm not sure, but anyway, it's a large track, you know, for whatever. Run.
Like a racetrack?
No, it was like a, what do you call it?
Well, who cares? Get to the story. Come on.
Anyway, so I was walking my dog, and it was getting close to dusk. And I didn't realize it. Well, there's a lot of trees and stuff over there, right? So I was walking and wasn't really paying attention to anything. I was just walking along. I'd walked there many times. I used to go there all the time because I lived nearby. It was a good place to walk the dog. And I didn't see any of those wolf-like creatures, but thank God. But I was just walking along, and all of a sudden my boyfriend came over. And we lived about, oh, I don't know, a half a mile from there, not very far. And he goes, what are you doing over here? And I said, oh, I'm just walking the dog. And he goes, did you know somebody's following you? And I said, no, I did not. And he said, well, look right over there. And sure enough, in the bushes over there in the dark, there was this man. And as soon as he saw us watching him, he took off.
He was in the bushes?
Yeah.
This was not going to be a pleasant ending at all.
No.
At all. Good thing your boyfriend was around to let you know anything could have happened to you then. My gosh. Look, we're going to take a break in just a second. We're going to come back with final open line calls right here on Coast to Coast AM. And lots going on. First of all, this weekend, we've got Connie Willis sitting in on Saturday night. And then our buddy and colleague George Knapp on Sunday. And, of course, then we've got another full week of great shows for you next week as we move inch by inch to get into March the week after. Just rapid. Don't forget, this is a leap year. February 29, which will be on a Monday. We get that extra day. I don't know what you're going to do with it, but that's what we're going to do. Okay, don't forget to like us on Facebook. That continues to grow. Follow us on Twitter. We send out little messages all the time. Great ones today about paranormaldate.com. We're on Instagram as well. Social media tied into the program. That's what it's all about. So let's come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take final calls next. If you're a member of ParanormalDate.com, we'd like you to become part of a promotion. So just send Tom an email at Tom@ParanormalDate.com. Simple as that, especially if you've started to meet people. Tom@ParanormalDate.com. Okay, welcome back. George Norrie back with you. Our final segment here of Fright Night Open Lines. And let's go right to the phones because the clock is ticking. Annie in Alabama, welcome to the show. Annie, what's up?
Thank you, George.
You're welcome.
I think the FBI has marked up the wrong tree. They could have already been into that iPhone. They just don't seem to see the forest for the trees. First of all, you can't get a subpoena for something that's in somebody's mind only. It's intangible property and intellectual property. You can't get a search warrant for it because it's not physical.
Well, wait a minute. They want in the phone. They don't want in somebody's mind.
Well, that's what they're really driving at. That's what they're trying to lead up to here.
But do you think Apple should allow them and freely open it up? You don't, huh?
No. But the way for them to have already gotten into it would have been that they should have taken an identical phone and bought it with their own money and hired somebody to find a way to get into it and not tell the FBI how they got into it. Just whoever has a phone that's identical that can come up with a way to do the back door.
I guess they can't get in. I don't know
why. You know, there's somebody out there that can crack that. That's ridiculous.
Well, you know, I've got mixed feelings about this whole thing. On one hand, you know, we should have our privacy. You don't want this in the hands of the wrong people. You know, if they want to open up everybody's phones, look out. On the other hand, what if there's some really nasty stuff on that lunatic's phone that we need to know about?
Yeah, well, they wouldn't have to give away the secret to how they got in the door. They would just need to find a way to get it with another phone, because if they use that phone, they're going to scram the information.
That's right. It'll be gone. That's right.
They could get another phone identical to it and practice with that.
Well, apparently it's easier if Apple just does it for them. You know, the problem is Apple has done this before. They've opened up other phones. It's not the first time. This time they've decided to back off.
Maybe they didn't ask nice.
Please, can we open up your phone? Jason in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jace, thanks for holding so long.
Oh, my pleasure. I got a scary one for you.
Okay.
In 99, I decided I was going to move to Hawaii, and the best way to scout out a place to live, I decided to backpack around the islands. I found myself on Oahu on the North Shore in a place called Stavella Bay, a beautiful bay with a crescent bay with palm trees lining the whole thing.
Nice.
It seemed to fall into the ocean. And it was sunset, and I decided, hey, this, you know, I might just camp here for the night. So I took my backpack off, leaned it up against a palm tree, fell asleep. Beautiful night, 85 degrees. Trade winds blowing, and I woke up, someone calling my name, Jason. I wake up, it's raining, there's lightning coming from the clouds above. I look over to my right, and there's a little Hawaiian boy, and he says, "Brother, they're coming for you, cuz. They're coming for you."
Whoa.
Look back up in the sky, and through the cloud that all the lightning was coming out of, a saucer disc came out of it.
Jeez.
And the little Hawaiian boy ran into the woods, into the banyan forest. So something said, "You got to follow him. You got to follow him." So he was running really fast. It was hard to keep up with him. And then all of a sudden, the hair on the back of my neck stood up, and I felt something coming right down on me. And all of a sudden, there was this little beach bungalow, and he ran inside. So I follow him in, and I stop in the living room, and there's a man and a woman, they're just pointing to the back room. So I run in the back room, and I heard the door open, the front door open, so someone else was behind me, and I ran into this bedroom and into the closet, and it was had a louvered door, and I'm looking through the louvered door, and all of a sudden this dark cloaked figure floats in. He doesn't have feet, he's just a floating cloak with a large hood over his head, and he floats right in front of the louvered door. And I'm thinking, I'm a sitting duck. What is this thing? What? I go, I can't just sit here. I need to jump out on it. And I got like the power and the Lord in me, and I jumped out, and it floated back. And I said, "What do you want?" He took his hood off, and he was a mantis being. And I was getting ready to say, "In the name of Jesus, you get out of here."
Yeah.
But he took his finger to his lips, and he goes, "Shh." And his finger was a razor blade. And right when I was like, "No, you," and I was going to say something, he cut my lips so I couldn't talk.
He
with the
cut.
Blood,
he cut your lips.
He cut my lip in an X pattern, kind of like Zorro, but instead of a Z, an X, right on my lip. And he took his cloak off and put it on the ground in front of, between us, and he let my blood drip off his razor blade finger onto the cloak, and right then a second being started to raise up out of this cloak, and I woke up on the beach. It was a dream, but there was a bright light in my face, and I'm like, oh, thank God, it's a dream. And this is when it gets really weird. The bright light, I thought, is that a boat in the ocean? Because I'm 20 feet from the ocean,
yeah,
back against the palm tree, and it's still raining. And as soon as I said to myself, oh, I got to get up, that's probably a cop boat. I'm not supposed to be sleeping on the beach or whatever. And then I was paralyzed. And I said, this can't be real. I'm awake now.
Now you're awake. That's right.
Now I'm awake. I'm awake, buddy. And this voice said, you don't know what's real. We own you. And right then I was in a ship standing next to a gray alien.
Ugh.
And he said, you work for me now. The ones on your right, they work for you. I looked to my right. There was three little gray aliens to my right. And I said, what am I doing here? He says, you can ask me questions, but the ones on your right, you can only give orders. The ones on my right were little 3-foot little gray guys.
Yeah, well, that we've seen.
Left, yeah, the one on my left was taller. He was kind of thin and tall. And he seemed to have more facial expressions and emotions. The one on my right, the guys that worked for me, just seemed like drones. I said, what am I doing here? He goes, you'll see. And a buzzer sounded, and there was this tube that came out of the ceiling. And I look up, and there's a baby in it, George, a little baby. And it started to come down into my arms. I go, what am I doing? He goes, cut the umbilical cord. And I go, why? We're rejecting these. And as they die, they need human contact.
Oh, my God.
And I cried, George. And as soon as I cut the umbilical cord, within 30 seconds, this little baby would die. But it wasn't quite human. It looked human, but I knew it wasn't really human.
They were processing these things. They were making them.
I was in the machine. They were making these things. They were, but I couldn't see the level above or what was going on. The room was moist, and the walls kind of crawled and had like a sweat to them.
And this was not a dream.
This was not a dream. When I would pass the baby to my little 3 workers on the right, I'd catch the next one. And this thought went on for hours, man. And I'm just bawling and crying. And I look at the one on my left.
All rejected. All rejected.
All rejected. And I ask, why are they rejected? He says, well, it has to do with the soul. We're processing souls here. And if they don't connect with the body, then they don't get to live. And I go, well, what happens to the souls with these ones? And they said, that's what we're trying to figure out.
They didn't have that answer, did they?
No. Or they were lying to me. I don't know. And then all of a sudden, I look to my right, and my 3 workers who are supposed to be snap, crack, you know, workers on my right, they're laying on the ground like they're drunk. And I look at them like, get up, you dogs. We got work to do. So now I'm invested in this. And I realize they're consuming the dead babies.
Oh,
and right then my heart dropped.
Oh, jeez. Totally,
I said, in the name of Jesus, you guys stop eating those babies, you dogs. And right then I woke up on the beach. Was it another dream? No, my backpack wasn't there. I wasn't with my backpack. I was 100 yards from where I started from.
And so, how old were you when this happened?
28.
Jeez. Only a few years ago.
Oh, yeah, it was before I joined the Coast Guard, and, you know, and I was a different guy.
Jeez.
A long-haired, wandering guy.
That, I got to tell you, that is one of the strangest stories we've had in a long, long time. Let me take a few more quick calls. Thanks, Jason, for that. Jeez. That's unbelievable. Let's go to New York. Steve's with us. Steve, welcome to the show.
It's an honor to speak with you, George. I enjoy your work and your program for so many years.
Thank you, Stephen.
Ever since even Art, listening to Art, too. And I just wanted, if I may, to bust apart this notion of privacy that people yell and scream about in relation to aiding the FBI by Tim Cook or not.
Tim Cook being the CEO of Apple, people who don't
correct,
know.
Correct. And he will not yield.
No.
He will not assist.
Yet he has on other cases. That's what's so weird about this.
Yeah. Well, that's very strange, isn't it?
Yep.
And my take on this is this. Politically, I think this Tim Cook should be arrested. On a cosmic level, I see our little planet, water, rock, earth, in a limitless universe. And until someone comes on your approach, until an extraterrestrial is seated with you, George, and you interview them, you know, and we know it, or is on a news program, you know, and, you know, there's a tour inside the spaceship. Until that happens, and the billions in the world see it and realize it, this Earth, this planet, is super private. We are private in a very limitless, uncountable number of light years universe.
Well, look, this is what's got to happen, I think. And, you know, conspiracies aside, you know, and I know, that those two people, the couple, Farouk and his wife, killed 14 people. We know that. So something's in that phone, and we should be able to look at it. Sometimes you got to be able to help law enforcement. And in this particular case, I think Apple should say, absolutely. We're going to be in a room, all of us together. We're going to open this phone, take your data from these killers, and move on. For Dan Galante, Bobo Johnson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.